Hey everybody, welcome to the Monday Night Raw Review. And we've got a ton to cover tonight. From Retribution attacking Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee, Zelina Vega finally getting her singles run, the weird ending with Mickie James and Asuka, Dominic Mysterio versus Seth Rollins inside of a steel cage, Braun Strowman dominating Raw Underground, and so much more. Let's get everything started right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for your Monday Night Raw review that aired last night, September 14th, 2020. We have a lot to talk about with Monday Night Raw. There's really a lot to discuss as football is back and WWE tries to put their best foot forward. And it was an in-your-face Raw. So not only are we going to get pay-per-views with cute taglines now, maybe we're going to get them for every Monday Night Raw and SmackDown. Just have some cute little marketing slogan. I honestly, I don't know how to feel about it. I know that's kind of a small thing to talk about, but when is the last time you had Raw with a marketing slogan underneath it? You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just trying to draw more eyeballs to the product. And by people going, wait, what's Raw in your face? What's going on? And then tuning in and then the fans are just going to go, oh, it's just the same Monday Night Raw. What's in your face about it? So it may be a short-term win to maybe create more interest in the product by slightly renaming things, but I doubt it because fans are going to go in and go, oh, this is just regular old Monday Night Raw. So anyway, guys, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me. I am, right off the bat, I'm going to let you know, I'm starting to do YouTube videos. And they're only like a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops discussing the things going on in WWE. It's kind of like a little news brief slash opinions. And that is what we're doing and seeing how that works and seeing how viewership goes and subs go. And so far, so good. I think you guys are enjoying them. Or if you haven't checked it out, just go to YouTube and search the WWE Podcast. Very easy. I've also put a link to the YouTube in the description of this show. So if you don't know, you can't find it, it's in the description of this show. All right, so let's get to voicemails. We actually have one tonight. We'll take a listen and I'll respond to it and then we'll get into the Monday Night Raw review. So by the way, if you guys want to participate in the whole voicemail thing, it's super easy to do. You can either email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can call and leave a voicemail for the show. The show's number is 518-952-0247, and we'll play your voicemail that way as well. So let's get to it and see what a listener has to say.
Hi, Matt. This is Jeff again from the Philippines, and I would like just to give some of my opinions happening in the WWE. papers about the Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton program where Drew beat Orton in SummerSlam and Keith Lee defeated Orton just 7 days after at Payback. I think they heavily damaged Orton's profile. And for me, I think it is very not that believable if you see Randy Orton beating Drew McIntyre at Clash of Champions, because he was on a roll a few months back, destroying legends, and now they made him lose to Drew and Keith Lee in a span of 8 days. So I think that's my opinion on that. And on the Street Profits, they're annoying. I can stand them. I want the Raw Tag Titles off of those guys. And on the John Morrison and the Miz program, with them chasing after Otis' Money in the Bank contract, Miz and Morrison don't deserve to be treated like that. And if they're going to make one of them get the contract from Otis, like be a new Money in the Bank holder, then I'll be fine if they have to go through that program, just so we could get a really deserving guy, a guy deserving of the contract. And that's all. Thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks so much for calling back again. So cool that I have somebody from the Philippines, all the way from the Philippines, listening to this show. That's just so cool. I know I said that the last time, but you know, I heard it again. I'm like, wow. You know, it's just so cool that you can reach somebody worldwide and be able to discuss wrestling. So thanks again, Jeff. Your questions, a lot are tag team related. So I'll take it one by one here. Drew beating Orton and Orton just being overall damaged and having Keith Lee beat him as well. I've mentioned it on the show. I mean, I don't know what logic they had in their brains when they decided to have Orton, you know, basically get his head kicked off 3 times by Drew McIntyre. I know he was paying him back, but Orton is not a guy that gets paid back. Orton's a guy that just builds heat and gets away with it. And I know it's against your WWE champion, but you never have a hot... WWE has not had this hot of a heel, and I honestly don't know how long. And I don't know why Keith Lee beat him, because, I mean, what, it's Keith Lee's debut. How does Keith Lee's debut trump Randy Orton's just monster historic heel run? Somebody tell me how that math works. It doesn't. It doesn't. People undervalue, and sometimes fans, I do sometimes as well. I'm not, you know, innocent of this, but I think there are a lot of times where we undervalue great heels, historic heels for the baby faces. But guess what? You can't have yin without the yang. You got to have a hot heel for a hot baby face to stand up to. You have to have one to have the other. They are absolutely dependent on one another. And baby faces are more dependent on heels than heels are of baby faces, because you need someone to stand up to that evil SOB. So having a hot heel inversely creates a hot baby face, or at least creates the potential for a hot baby face for someone to come and, you know, punch his face in and give you the satisfaction that we're all waiting for. But again, Randy Orton was on a hell of a streak, and it's like he's cooled off. He's cooled off by getting beat by Keith Lee, getting his head kicked in 3 times. And now it's like, well, yeah, Edge is still looming out there. And, Randy Orton's not ice cold. Let's be honest. He's still got some heat. But that's really mainly with Edge, right? And maybe the other legends he kicked their head off. I don't know. I would have not booked the way that they did with Randy Orton. And he wasn't even on Raw this week because of his wife's photo shoot, I guess. If you watch his Instagram, that's apparently the reason. But yeah, damage has been done to Orton in terms of his heat, not overall character or overall value as a member of the Raw roster. Not at all. Just his heel heat that has just been awesome and nuclear. The Street Profits, you guys know how I feel about the Street Profits. They don't, to me, and I'll agree with you, Jeff, they are annoying. and not in a charming way. Although some people may find them charming, I don't. They're skilled in the ring. They have a lot of charisma. They're very cartoonish, very marketable, very 2020 tag team, aren't they? They are just a 2020 tag team. And what I mean by that is they embody what the 2020 style of pro wrestling is, the presentation of the wrestling industry is. Or to clarify, WWE's presentation, not the industry as a whole with independents and AEW and Ring of Honor and all that. I'm talking about WWE's vision of what pro wrestling is. They embody that vision. And that is not something that is endearing to me. Their personalities to me have been obnoxious since day one. I have not enjoyed the Street Profits from a babyface perspective. That's not to say that WWE should fire them. That's not to say that they should demote them or send them back to NXT. On the contrary, I am fine with them being in the position they're at. Just flip the role. Make them heels. They scream it. They're obnoxious. At least, again, maybe that's just not my cup of tea, the way that they are, or the way that they act. They're great inside the ring, but to me, it just makes no sense that they're babyface. So I agree. Miz and Morrison chasing Otis's Money in the Bank briefcase. Yeah. I think that the more this happens every week, that eventually they're going to get their hands on his contract one way or the other, and that they are going to present this to Miz's lawyer to find a loophole so that some one of them or both of them can be the Money in the Bank briefcase holders. I think that would honestly be the smart thing to do, because after Otis's Money in the Bank win, it has been a free fall for his character, an absolute free fall, because fans were pissed. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Fans were not happy with the way that Otis won it. It felt rushed. It didn't feel like he belonged. He never really fleshed out his tag team run with Tucker at all. I mean, they didn't even have a tag team championship match before he was put in a position to be a solo act because Vince saw a bunch of comedy in him. So there's been a lot of resentment for the Otis character. And once WWE saw something organic happening with Otis, they saw something that fans were latching onto that maybe they didn't see. WWE went, "Ooh, I see what they're seeing. Let's add to it. Let's WWE-ize it." And that's where things went south. They just can't let things organically happen. And when they try to make things organically happen, it has the opposite effect. So it almost has to be under the nose of WWE, where the fans see what's happening, but WWE doesn't. And WWE goes, "I don't understand why the fans love this person so much." It's a weird dynamic between the fans and WWE. But I think the Money in the Bank briefcase will be stripped from Otis some way, and that will be the best thing that ever happened to his character. Best thing ever. And he needs to get back to tag team wrestling. They need to take the stupid tank top off of him, make him a little more serious. I'm not saying make him, just a complete 180. I'm saying make him more serious. Stop making him a comedy act so we can take him seriously. I don't want him being viewed as comedic relief. I don't need him being that comedy break in the show. That's not what I need, nor do I want from this team, especially Otis. So we'll see. We'll see. I think, like I said, that'd be the best thing for his character, period. Because he needs to take a step back. And that's exactly how they'll backtrack, is finding a loophole with Miz and Morrison. So thanks again, Jeff. And if you feel free to call back, as well as everyone listening, please call and also email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So let's get moving. Let's get into Monday Night Raw, which was a very eventful Raw, as it should be, given that they now have really stiff competition with Monday Night Football back. And Drew McIntyre, I think, at least address the fact that he doesn't have his jaw wired shut and he's basically one punch away from fully fracturing his jaw and needing his jaw wired shut. Why would you disclose that information in a public setting to let your opponent know of how easily and how fragile you are and how all it is going to take is one punch? Why would you do that? It doesn't make sense. It's like giving your game plan away or at least exposing your weakness. I don't get it, but at least I'm also on the other side of, like, well, at least he addressed the fact that his jaw wasn't wired shut because it made no sense that he was talking, walking like, you know, nothing was wrong. And there isn't a whole lot you can do for a broken jaw other than wire it shut, just like a broken rib. You just kind of like tape them, can't really do anything. So, and then having Keith Lee come out and having them build heat for really throughout the show that ended up eventually being in a brawl was, I'll say this. It got me more interested in the match, which I guess is the ultimate goal for the finish of the show. But at the same time, they talked about how great friends they were, how great they were friends and everything else. And boy, that disintegrated real quick, didn't it? I mean, how easy was it to break these two up? Just a couple of words. But yet they talked about how they were friends for years. Fine. I mean, it's small, small stuff. Honestly, the major goal, as it should be, is to have fans interested in the main event. And I think if they had just kind of played nice guy the entire show and maybe had a couple of conversations and, you know, maybe the best man win in all this respect, I don't think fans would have been as interested as they were at the end of the show. Now, we got the predictable outcome of no clear-cut winner, but is there really a reason to have a clear-cut winner? This, to me, is one of those situations where having a not a clear-cut winner and having a screwy finish is the right way to go. Neither man can afford a clean loss. Neither can. Now, had it gone clean and no interference, probably Drew McIntyre would have won. But they don't want Keith Lee taking any big losses right now. He has not lost a match yet. He got RKO'd and then rolled out of the ring, and now he got interrupted here by Retribution. And Retribution attacked Drew and Keith Lee as they kind of stood side by side to try to take this group out. And I'll get to Retribution in just a minute too. But one small thing, and I know there are probably some people out there that are thinking the opposite of me. And that's fine. That's fine. And this is not a political show. Let me be very frank with you. That would be a very dangerous territory because God knows what everyone's political affiliations are and thoughts as we get into an election year. It's going to be insanity, absolute insanity. But I will say this. Can I please watch a professional sports program without any political implications interjected into the show? Please. I am begging any sport to please put something on TV that doesn't remind me of what's going on in the real world. You may say, well, what's going on in the real world is more important. Yeah, no kidding. But when you want an escape, you want to be able to watch any sport, which was or used to be the escape from what's going on, and not be reminded of what's going on, because that's your escape. Otherwise, it's not an escape anymore, and it's just a reminder of what's really going on and that what you're watching isn't real, or is not as important, I should say. And you may be asking, what the hell are you talking about? Right? What are you talking about? What did WWE do? Well, it's not what really WWE did, it's what Keith Lee's attire said. And look, I'm not disagreeing, I'm just stating facts with what Keith Lee had on the back of his shirt, Black Lives Matter. Look, that, you know, I'm not getting into the whole debate about it. My point is only this, that I would like to be in a sports environment or any environment where I don't have to be reminded about the just craziness going on in the world right now. Like, that's all. Again, you may say, oh, you don't agree? No, I didn't say that. I'm just not getting into that part of it because getting into that is a rabbit hole. I'm just getting into the fact that sports is no longer sports anymore because it's interjecting real life politics. So that's all my point is. That's my only point. I know that you may say, well, you know, Keith Lee's a black man. He has an obligation to do this. Well, no, he doesn't. He's in an entertainment. He is in entertainment. He's in a company that has entertainment right in the name. And entertainment should be entertainment. It should not be anything involving serious things going on in the world. I just don't believe that. There are many, 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 many other places to go for that. Just check your social media. Check the news anywhere else. But there's no escape now. You can't even watch an awards show now without, you know, any kind of political banter being interjected into it. And sports has become a platform where athletes feel the need and owners feel the need that they need to voice their stance on the political environment. Maybe because it's an election year, maybe if it wasn't, it would still be this way. I don't know, because I don't care what your political stance is. I honestly don't care. I don't. I mean, I'm not saying you, the listener. I'm saying when I'm watching the professional sports. But okay, let's move on. I've made my point. It's just kind of one of those, like, I just sighed. I'm like, I'm watching wrestling so I can get in just completely enveloped in an environment that is playtime. And I can just forget about things going on and I can just enjoy myself. And it's one of those, like, oh, you can't escape it. You can't escape it. And it's just sometimes very frustrating when you have nowhere to go. All right, moving on here. I made my point, I think. Okay, so beyond the whole Keith Lee, Drew McIntyre non-finish, as I made a promise a couple minutes ago before my political point, was that Retribution came in and made their biggest statement yet. And they took out Keith Lee, they took out Drew McIntyre, only to have the Hurt Business come in at the end of Raw and do what they did. They said they were going to do to Adam Pearce and be their security that apparently is the security, because their security team can't be security. That's essentially what it was. And they came in and somewhat even the odds, even though it was like suddenly, you know, 20 of them again. I mean, I don't know where these people are coming from. As Jim Ross once said, is there a Dudley farm? Remember, anybody else remember that statement where I think it was Spike Dudley and D-Von and Bubba Ray? And is there a Retribution farm where they're just growing these people? I don't know. I took that straight from Jim Ross. But I don't understand why there has to be an ill-defined amount of members. What, can we just please have a defined number of people? This storyline, and I put this in one of my videos on YouTube, which, by the way, search the WWE podcast or just look at the link in this description of the show, where I talked about the just complete insanity of Retribution, where I'm starting to lose interest and fast in this story. Yes, they're speaking a little bit, and they spoke this past Monday night, and they talked about how this company, WWE, is contaminated. Maybe that's not the right word, but they essentially said they shoved people aside, and we were in NXT, and they shoved us aside, and they, I guess, are also trying to play on fans' anger of the mass release in April, and again this past week with administrative staff, not talent. And maybe that's what they're playing on top of the riots going on around the world, where they are clearly mimicking some of the things going on. There's just no question about it. So Retribution, I think, represents a couple of things. But I there's no clear leader. There's just always like a big guy that talks. There's women in the group, which is honestly, that's interesting, because I can't remember the last time a faction where it wasn't just a manager managing men as a faction. It was true members of that organization, that stable, were both men and women. I don't even know. You could say China, I guess, with DX. She wasn't just a, you know, standing there as a mouthpiece or even eye candy. She could go and she could, you know, compete with some of the men at times. And I just don't know the last time women and men were on the same team as an actual group. So that's actually really, to me, that's interesting as hell. Like, that is intriguing. But them just doing senseless beatdowns, we understand what they view WWE as. And they take out Keith Lee and McIntyre, who ended up actually standing tall by doing sunset flips, each of them on the outside. Why the hell Keith Lee's doing this? Just because he can, I guess. Super athletic guy. I mean, I'm a big fan of Keith Lee. But them taking out Retribution was interesting. Now, I will also say this about Retribution. Can we please move on? Can we please move on from the premise or the narrative that WWE is trying to keep these people out? Can we please move on from that? You may say, well, why? Well, because it's absolutely silly. Let me just list a couple of things. And if you have heard me before, this may not be anything new. But it needs to be said, because it's a glaring omission of logic. Is that if you have people that aren't supposed to be there, do you think you're going to give them camera time, on-air time? If they're truly not supposed to be there, wouldn't they not have any airtime? Wouldn't they just cut the feed? Right? And how did they get a camera to air this stuff? Did they just commandeer and beat up a cameraman, take it, and click the, you know, on button? Again, the production shark, if they truly weren't supposed to be there, would have cut the feed. And if Adam Pearce could talk to his security and tell them, you are the single worst security team in the history of security. I mean, look, this is not even laughable anymore. It's just sad in terms of, like, believability of the security team that's always just like the local wrestlers that dress up and put a security shirt on. This is what they do. They just kind of like interchange the local talent of, you're going to be on Monday Night Raw, put the security shirt on, and Adam Pearce is going to yell at you. But security's standing there. If this was that big of a deal, wouldn't they have security swarming the place? Hell, WWE has hired police officers at times. Or at least have talent stand up to what's going on. Yeah, they had the Hurt Business do it, but on a large scale, it makes no sense. And then they flicker the lights to warn you they're coming for a surprise attack. Boy, that's an oxymoron if I ever heard one. Let me notify you of my surprise attack. Just think about those words. I mean, seriously. I'm losing interest because of the believability of this whole thing. And they have a mission, I guess, and we know what they feel from WWE, what their view of the company is. I understand that. I kind of had that feeling the second we saw them take spray paint and, you know, put a WWE logo and then put a strike through it. I go, oh, okay, they don't like WWE, and their whole mission is going to be they hate the company because of X, Y, and Z. And so far, they're telling me exactly what I thought they told us on, what, day one? It's been 6 weeks since their attack first began in August, beginning of August. And since then, we've gotten little to nothing. And varying amounts of the members going in and out of SmackDown, in and out of Raw. It's just very, very confusing where this whole thing's going. And I'm not really high on retribution right now. And that could change. Look, everything's subject to change. But it's like they had no clear-cut path. They just threw these people together. Not sure who's going to be in it. Just a big blob of people. Y'all are going to wear ninjas outfits. And we're going to attack everything. I mean, that's essentially what they have done with this group. And you'll notice Adam Pearce has suddenly risen to general manager status. Just kind of quietly has become the general manager of the show. And is just there to provide direction. And, you know, some people might say, oh, I miss the GM role. I don't. I still don't, because of how many decades we got the GM role. And it was abused, and beaten and killed and resurrected and killed again. So I don't mind an authority figure from time to time, but Adam Pearce seems to be gaining more and more camera time as the weeks go on. And he's a bit of a hothead, too, and kind of an overactor, which is not appealing. And I guess he's supposed to be neutral, but I still kind of view him as a heel, maybe because by default, if you're an authority figure, you're a heel if we don't know you. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Adam Pearce on screen right now, but maybe that'll get better. Maybe he'll just fade into the background. But again, the trend is for more Adam Pearce, and I don't know if I like it. Not at this time anyway. And I just want to see someone beat the hell out of him. So that's how I know that I'm not a fan of him. And maybe you guys feel the same way, maybe you don't, but all right.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
So let's move on here. Let's change topics. And that is with Mickie James versus Asuka. How this match even happened, honestly, was a mystery to me. I'm still not understanding how this happened. How the hell we had Asuka or Mickie James earn an opportunity, maybe because of tenure. I think that's what we're all supposed to believe, and that she won via tenure. And that just because of who she was or name value, that she gets an opportunity. Yeah, that makes as much sense to me as it does to you. But nonetheless, we get this match, and at least we got a bit of a promo from Mickie James. And she's talking about how she's loved being able to do what she does, and that she has, you know, she loves that this has challenged her to be the best version of her that she could be every day. Please, this is what is wrong with WWE. Are we having running a Saturday morning special for, you know, 5 to 10 year olds, or are we running a professional wrestling company? Like, this is why WWE can't build stars. And this is not the only reason. This is one of many that they just haven't been successful in building big stars over the last 15 years. Big stars. I'm talking like level John Cena, Rock, Austin, which are, you know, very rare to begin with. But even in the same like atmosphere as those people, that they've had trouble building stars. So what I mean by that is, why does Mickie James have to talk about how much this means to her and being the best person she could be? And like, that's just stomach churning crap. If you're like, look, if you're a man from 20 to 40, is that going to resonate with you? And that's their core audience. Does that resonate with you? Maybe if you have a small child at home who likes watching wrestling, you're going, okay, this is very fruitful and a great message to send to kids. But you're still the consumer. Like, I don't understand. Like, this is why WWE has a hard time. One of the reasons they have a hard time of building stars that make true money is that it's just sometimes stomach churning from the baby faces of how pure they are. So anyway, Mickie James gives us something, and then she basically says that this is her last chance. Well, why? Why is this your last chance? It doesn't make sense that this is your last chance. Are you retiring and not telling us? Or based on your history of not carrying a championship for over 10 years, that this is probably your only chance to get the championship because you won't be around in another 10 years. Is that the reason? Because I'm not following. I'm not following why this is your last chance. Because if you've watched Mickie, your golden rule of winning, getting an opportunity to a championship, do I need to say it? Everyone in unison, 1, 2, 3, attack the champion. Very good, class. Very good. So the match itself with Asuka, I think, was good. It's probably Mickie James' best match that she's had in I don't even know how long. There were some botches in there, of which I'm sure the botch guy on YouTube has covered. And actually, that's funny I mentioned that. He just put out a video on Mickie James' botch on his YouTube channel. Check him out. The Botch Guy does great stuff, and really, really engaging and funny, and just magnetic is his show. So check out The Botch Guy on YouTube. But Mickie James did have a bit of a botch, I guess, at the end. And maybe that was supposed to be the way it was, but, or they just went, well, I guess we're going to own this. Where Asuka got the Asuka lock and Mickie James never tapped. And then the referee just stopped the match and said that the match was stopped because Mickie James could no longer continue. Did they really just Hell in a Cell Mickie James? Like what they did with Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins at Hell in a Cell last year? That basically graveyard Seth Rollins' babyface character and damaged the Fiend beyond repair? They basically did that. Like, why did the referee stop it? What? That's not how this works. The referee doesn't get the option to stop it unless there's a true injury. And maybe there was a true injury. Maybe that's what we're missing, is that there was an actual injury done to Mickie James, and that's what's floating around there, around the internet. So maybe Mickie James was truly injured, and if she is, absolutely stop the match. But it didn't look like she was. She looked surprised, like, hey, what the hell's going on? So I don't know who didn't know the finish, but it looks kind of sloppy. The announcers didn't really try to cover for it, so that tells me it's an angle. Usually they'll try to do some kind of verbiage to cover for what just happened. And in this case, they were as confused as we were. Maybe they were instructed to be, or maybe they just went against the common knowledge that something went wrong, and they just were like, hey, we don't understand either. And they just kind of went with it. So I don't know which one it is, but it kind of was weird and made me think, like, why is this program going to continue? Because if it ended that weirdly, and it was truly meant to be as designed that Mickie James didn't give up, and why the hell the referee stopped it, then that's storyline. But I don't see Mickie James being engaged in any kind of storyline at this level. It seemed kind of like a one and done. And I could be wrong. But Mickie James does not feel like she's in the game for long, especially at that level. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of this, but let me know what you guys thought about this. But more importantly about this segment was part two. Zelina Vega comes out after walking away from the arguing of Angel Garza and Andrade, which is getting absolutely obnoxiously just unnecessarily long. And it's getting to the point where I don't even think fans care because we don't know what's going on. They don't know, I think. We've never been told what the problem is with these two. And it's just Zelina trying to always put out fires. And it just seemed like she had had enough. And she walked out to the ring, and after Asuka had won her match, and I say won very kind of loosely, but basically saying that she's done helping other people with their careers and that she's focusing now on her own, and slaps Asuka and walks out of the ring, or really retreats as Asuka was going to retaliate. I love this. I did. I love the fact that they finally are giving Zelina Vega her due, and or at least an opportunity at her due, because I think she could be an amazing women's champion. I've sung her praises so many times on this show that I can't count, and she is an amazing talent on the mic. She's really good in the ring. Yeah, she's small, but so is Alexa Bliss, right? Like, just because you're small doesn't mean that you can't carry the championship. And especially Zelina Vega being a heel. What is more, to me, there's nothing more smarmy about a heel that's undersized, runs his or her mouth, is a champion, and is able to escape from getting their ass whooped. That is, to me, a great combination. It doesn't always have to be a dominating heel like Charlotte Flair or a dominating heel like Braun Strowman. You can have the opposite. Not all heels have to be oversized. Heels can be undersized and still evil, slimy people. And why not? Why not try it with Zelina? She has got all the tools. She's got the promo ability. She's got the believability. Even more important, she's got the believability. She's got that presence about her that doesn't feel like she's playing wrestler. It feels like I'm watching her be her. That is tough to do. That's really tough to do. I'm not saying it's easy. This is why I pointed out, because you don't see it that often. Zelina Vega is the real deal. And so I love the fact that they have signaled, hey, let's do this with Zelina. I don't believe that she will capture the women's championship from Asuka, at least in a fair capacity. I don't even know if she, even in an unfair capacity, she will become women's champion anytime soon. But at least they have signaled that this is a trial run for Zelina Vega as a single star. And I hope that she succeeds. I think she will. The only thing I didn't like about this, and it had nothing to do with Zelina Vega herself, was the commentators. And I think it was even Charlie Caruso who talked about how it was a transition where Charlie had said, well, moving on to a champion or a challenger that has more realistic odds of winning or something like that after the Zelina segment. There was something to that effect of basically disrespecting Zelina Vega of having almost no chance to beat Asuka. And the announcers kind of played into that too. if you're starting off somebody as a single star, why not give them credibility? Why not off the bat say, hey, this, you know, he or she, this is their first time on their own. Let's see what they can do. Why are we building, why are we tearing them down before they even get started is my question. Makes no sense. I didn't like that. They undermined what Zelina Vega just did. And standing up for herself, focusing on herself for once instead of other people. And they tear her down and undermine her after she just stood up to the Raw Women's Champion. That is the one thing I did not like. I was very, very disappointed when I heard that verbiage being used against Zelina. And what? Because she's undersized? That's the reason? Are we really going to go that road again? How many times do we need to play the undersized card? Daniel Bryan, right? Shorty G, i.e. Chad Gable, Rey Mysterio, Shawn Michaels actually to some degree, Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Do we really need to play the underdog card or the undersized card with Zelina Vega? The answer is no. Because Zelina Vega can also talk people into seats. I really believe that she has that ability. I think she has been capped in her potential, I should say, when she's with a group and she's managing a group. Her potential is capped because she's not in a spotlight role. She's the voice of that group, and she's been a brilliant voice of the group, and I've sung her praises here. But it doesn't allow you to really excel because the focus isn't on you. It's on the people you're managing. Well, now the tables are turned. And I hope this is not just an experiment. I hope it's we see what the potential is in you. Let's effing go. That is what my hope is for Zelina Vega. Because her as women's champion could be awesome. I don't think many people out there that could, in the women's division, that could go toe-to-toe on the mic with Zelina Vega. And believability. All right, well, moving on here. Braun Strowman gets involved in Raw Underground. And I guess just tears stuff up. He was very angry and threatened Shane McMahon and the bouncer at the door. And then just basically tore through everyone. Riddick Moss, it took a little while to take Riddick Moss down and then Ziggler, I think, at one point. Ziggler is like, what is Dolph Ziggler? What is a Dolph Ziggler? If you look up the definition of what a Dolph Ziggler is a synonym chameleon? Like, what is a Dolph Ziggler? I don't know. Because Dolph Ziggler goes from mediocre, kind of like floating around the mid-card, maybe challenging for the IC or United States Championship across his career, to scratching the championship for Raw or SmackDown, the Universal or WWE Championship, scratching it, screaming, cutting decent promos, and trying to make you believe to the best of his ability that he has a potential chance to win, even though when it comes down to it, he's not going to win. When the whole Kofi Kingston angle last year, the Drew McIntyre angle this year, we all know Dolph Ziggler ain't going to win. But damn it, Dolph does his best, and then he goes back into obscurity. And then he goes back into Raw Underground. Oh, and then he's on commentary. What the hell? It's kind of like he shows up to work and he's like, all right, guys, where do you need me today? I don't know where Dolph Ziggler is as a competitor, as a person. And I know he's just doing what he's told. He's a good little soldier. I understand that. And he is not biting the mouth or the hand that feeds him. I get it. I'm not saying that he should turn any of this down because he's doing what he's told and he's getting paid a whole lot of money to do it. So props to him. But like, Dolph Ziggler as a character somebody should do a thesis on the Dolph Ziggler character and do like a flow chart of sorts from his inception to current in 2020. Like, somebody do a flow chart, please. Like, what is Dolph Ziggler? I don't know. He's commentator. He's Raw Underground. He's the, it should have been me. It's the, the Drew McIntyre, you're champion because of me, screaming at The Miz and the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't hate it. I'm not saying I'm complaining about it. It's just, it's hilarious. Because from week to week, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dolph Ziggler shows up as a referee next week. Hell, maybe he should just be part of Adam Pearce's security team. They sure need a hell of a lot of help. I mean, what does Dolph Ziggler not do? It's just, I'm not infuriating. I'm not ranting. I'm just genuinely questioning the logic behind what Dolph Ziggler is. Beyond the guy that talks a good game, always wrestles a good to great match and makes his opponent look good. We all know what he is and who he's been compared to with Shawn Michaels, all that. But as a character, what is he? Beyond the guy that just talks a good match and loses, I don't know. I don't know. Anybody got any explanations, please send it my way. All right. Moving on. Dominic and Seth Rollins. Steel cage match. And I went over this quickly in also my YouTube video. Check it out. The WWE podcast on YouTube. I went over this and I have no problem with Dominic as a performer. I think he's great. No, I shouldn't say great. Great is overused. He looks good so far in the ring. I think better than most expected. And I think that he is adjusting well to the in-ring portion of his job. How we're supposed to believe that he can go toe-to-toe with a future Hall of Famer in his debut is mind-numbing. A guy that cashed in against Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. A guy that held the championship with the Authority for months and months and months. There's so many things with Seth Rollins that you look at Dominic and you're like, this punk kid can go toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins? How? Why? It just I don't understand it. They're trying their damnedest to make you look at his heart and his guts and his desire. They're making you try to look at the intangibles so you don't look at the tangibles of Dominic. WWE is trying to divert your attention from the intangible things, things you can't see or touch or feel, like desire and heart and will, for the lack of his character development. Because they're trying, I guess maybe they're trying to build character through those intangibles. But they're also, whether it's inadvertent or inadvertent, trying to divert your attention, and they are diverting your attention from the fact that this guy has zero personality. Like, none. Nothing. This guy is like talking to a cardboard box. I don't dislike Dominic. I'm not saying I hate Dominic or this is awful. No. It's just puzzling that a guy that still looks like he should be in, you know, your high school varsity team, like a varsity soccer team or basketball team, is going toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins and we're supposed to buy it. Again, skilled performer, clearly has done a lot of training. Let me not take that away. But number one big problem I have is that he can go toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins and we're all supposed to buy it. Number two, this guy, as I said, is as interesting as washing your laundry. It's boring, right? And he doesn't have a whole lot of conviction on the mic. He's not stuttering or anything. He's just very robotic. Maybe he needs a software update. I swear he's a robot. Maybe that's what it is. Just plug him in and give him a software update. Because it feels like it's what he needs. I want to just shake him and be like, what are you? Give me the real you. He's being reserved, and I appreciate the reservance. Is that a word? I don't know. It is now. Rather than the over-the-top cartoon nonsense that we sometimes see. He's like the antithesis of Adam Pearce. Where Adam Pearce is just overacting, screaming all the time. Dominic is acting like he's at a funeral home and whispering to friends, right? About, like, I'm sorry for your loss. Like, that's how he cuts his promos. I guess given the extremes, I'd rather have Dominic, and I appreciate his just kind of quiet confidence. Fine. But I don't know. He's all of a sudden main eventing thing or semi-main eventing Raw, and he should be nowhere near this. But hey, they're trying to build new stars. I appreciate that. I get it. But sometimes the way they go about it is a bit head scratching. Now moving on to the actual match itself. Fine. Again, Dominic's good. He's good. I have no issues with him in the ring. Very luchador style. Great. No problem. And I want to make that very clear. Two things. Number one, this is a rant I had on my show or my YouTube video. So I'm not going to really dive into it too much. You can go watch it. But why in a steel cage match, which if you have a steel cage match, the purpose of the steel cage is to what? Keep opponents together so that neither one can escape to the outside and take a break. It's just two men going at it. You can't get out. Okay, the next step is putting a roof on it with a cell. But that's the general premise of what a steel cage match is for. That's the purpose. That's why it was made. And now you have, and this is not anything new, but the one of the methods of being able to win that match, a steel cage match, is actually to escape the very structure that's supposed to keep you in there. And which is what the structure was for, is to keep you and your opponent in. So by you getting out of it is actually a method of victory. How does that work? And again, this is nothing new. I know you're going to say, oh, they've been doing this forever. I know they have, but I still don't like it. Every single time they do it, I'm as angry as I was the time before. It doesn't get better for me when they do this. And why WWE doesn't just say, hey, at least, you know, start making stipulations. You know, escaping the cage will not grant you a victory. You have to pin or submit inside the cage. Simple as that. Modify the rules. WWE does it all the time with things out of convenience. So escaping the cage, meaning literally somebody that starts on the side where the door is and the referee is, the bell could ring. He could ask the referee to open the door, and I can guarantee you before the other person can get to the other side of the ring, that person can get out, not lift a finger, and win the match. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So the fact that that is still a way to win is just, it's ridiculous. All right. The other thing is Aaliyah, Ray's daughter, showed some affection to Murphy after Murphy screwed up again. Even though Seth Rollins won the match, thank God, with two stomps. We had Aaliyah grab the hand or touch the arm of Murphy, who got beat down by Seth. Now, was that by design? Is there a romance angle coming? There's a lot of speculation there. It'd be interesting to have a romance angle. That would add a little bit more flavor to this whole thing. I don't know how that she could be okay with, you know, being infatuated with the person that helped torture and torment and pull the eye out of her father. Makes no sense there, but look, this angle's been going on for a long time. I think it's time to add something and or just plain end it, which I think will end at Hell in a Cell. I think that's the finale of this thing, but who knows? I mean, Aaliyah's, what, 19 from what I'm reading? Kind of weird. All right. The last thing I want to talk about is Kevin Owens and Aleister Black. We finally get the match, and Kevin Owens once again gets attacked from behind for like the third time by Aleister Black before the bell starts. Eventually, he fights back. Aleister Black takes his bandana off, which I actually kind of started to like. I was becoming, it added a little bit of a tweak to his character. So I was starting to like the bandana on his eye. It made him look a little more badass. And then Kevin Owens eventually hits the stunner for the victory. And that was it. I mean, that was it. I was very surprised that that's how it ended. I don't think that this is the final match, given that we are only a couple of weeks away. Are we a couple of weeks or 2 weeks, 3 weeks away from Clash of Champions? And 2 weeks, I think. So I think that this is probably a program that extends at least to the pay-per-view. So it's nice that Kevin Owens is at least getting some programs that are not just him hosting a silly talk show for being a platform for other programs. Like, he is in an actual program with a really good performer. Wrestler. Jeez, WWE is messing with my head. Wrestler. And it's nice to see that Kevin Owens, again, is being relevant and consistently relevant, which has been Kevin Owens' Achilles heel almost his entire career in WWE. Like, he'd go on this good run, and all of a sudden he kind of disappears or goes just in a program that is irrelevant, or hosts his talk shows for weeks on end. That has been kind of what Kevin Owens has done, and now he is, again, and hopefully in a steady program, and this is not just a hold me over. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much it. I know Lana had a segment where she got put through a table. Lana is like one of the most irrelevant women in WWE right now. And I've been advocating for Lana to just go away ever since she was with Bobby Lashley. She has been just not even good heel heat. Just, I'm done with this. I'm over it. Turn the channel. Like, that's how I felt about Lana. And she's still there. I think she'll kind of ride out her contract until she can get into AEW, probably with Miro, i.e. Rusev. That's my thinking. I don't know what her contract term is, but that's my thought, is that that's how long she lasts. And that's pretty much that. So, guys, I hope you've enjoyed the show. So much to talk about. Continue to please subscribe to me, not just on the podcast, but subscribe on YouTube. I know it's weird for me to say YouTube, under the WWE podcast. Again, I'll put a link in the description. If the link in the description is not like one of the blue links you just click, just copy and paste the link. I mean, it's pretty simple. But thank you so much, guys, for listening, for being loyal, or for those new listeners. I know I do have quite a few new listeners to the show, and many of you that have told me they came back to wrestling and have enjoyed the show to keep them involved in wrestling and interested. So maybe WWE can send some compensation this way, or like some kind of affiliate program. But thank you guys for listening. We'll be back tomorrow night with your wrestling nostalgia, and tons more coming the rest of the week. You guys know the schedule for that, which is like almost every day. I think the only day we don't publish is Monday, unless there's a pay-per-view, and then we publish Monday. So sometimes eight times a week. I mean, it's almost eight times a week that we have a show. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me. As always, I'll catch you next time. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand-in-hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.